This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
You're listening to the Evening Edition. I'm Kelvin Yee. Last month, we covered a report about how Mercy Malaysia founder Dr. Jamilah Mahmood had suggested that countries dealing with migration crisis could grant short-term citizenship to refugees. She said that a 120-day-long temporary legal citizenship would provide some protection to refugees while long-term solutions were being looked into. That would somewhat lift the burden off countries that take in refugees and at the same time gives refugees the right to live with dignity. And that's something most of us would not be able to comprehend, to live our lives without basic rights like healthcare, education and respect, which would explain why it's easy for us to be disconnected with the plight of refugees who, on top of fleeing violence in their home country, are treated like dirt once they reach foreign soil. So, how do we help? First, by understanding what it's like for refugees. And to help me out with that, I have Deepa Nambia from Asylum Access on the line with me now. Deepa, thanks for joining me this evening. Before we get into the details, can you talk to us about what you do at Asylum Access?
Sure. So I'm the country director of Asylum Access Malaysia. Asylum Access is a refugee human rights organization, and we believe that all refugees deserve a fair chance at a new life. And the premise of Asylum Access is the majority of refugees cannot be resettled to a third country. They can't return home. So our mission is really to help refugees where they are, live safely, move freely, work and attend school. How we do this is through legal empowerment, community development and leadership, as well as through policy reform.
All right, Deepa, maybe for the benefit of our listeners, could you help walk us through the process of what a refugee goes through once they land on foreign soil?
So there's quite a bit of commonalities as well as differences in the individual experiences of refugees from the time they leave their home country to the time they arrive in a foreign country, and also a lot of it depends on which country they end up arriving in. In terms of commonalities, and I can speak specifically in the context of Malaysia, there's no law or policy that identifies who a refugee is or provides any protection to them legally. And so you won't find in any legislation or regulation the word refugee on it. And so in terms of what their experience is, it's really what the common thread that runs through it is lack of legal status, no legal work rights, no formal education, and access to affordable healthcare is also a real concern. In terms of their daily lives, I mean, many of them, what we see from our clients, the greatest fear that they have is just the fear of being arrested for not having documents in Malaysia, not being able to work legally. Many of them, of course, work informally because they have to survive and they have to feed their families. Formal education is basically a no-go for refugees. Many of them have to study in community schoolings, which has serious lack of resources. And I think overall, in terms of the experience of a refugee, is one of extreme insecurity, and that really stems from uncertainty and lack of legal status. Mental health is another key concern. We've certainly seen in the clients that we work with, as well as clients that you know, when we discuss with other NGOs as well, this is a concern in terms of from the lowest level of anxiety all the way to very serious mental health concerns, and there's a lack of support systems for them here as well. But not all of that being said, there are some sort of limited informal protection in place. For example, for refugees who have UNHCR documentation, there's a bit more security in terms of their ability to move freely. They're not as often arrested. There's also some schemes popping up. There's a work pilot for refugees that are benefiting a small group of Rohingyas. There's also work permits or rather I-13 passes for Syrian refugees in Malaysia. So it's a bit of a difficult question to answer, but you know, I think that in terms of commonalities, it's really rooted in the legislation, but the differences also vary quite significantly based on their nationality, their ethnicity, the level of education, community support, cultural background, you know, ability to access information. So it's really quite an individual experience as well.
But even with the UNHCR card, their rights are still somewhat limited, am I right? To what extent does the UNHCR card allow refugees to live their lives?
So the UNHCR card is actually issued by the United Nations Refugee Agency. So it's not issued by the government, but the government essentially has allowed, their position has been that, you know, we are aware of refugees, we know that they're here, we allow them to stay in Malaysia on a temporary basis until they can be resettled. And they allow the UNHCR office here in Malaysia to operate so that they can process refugees, they can provide documentation for those who satisfy the requirements of the 1951 Refugee Convention. So it's really quite, UNHCR is really providing surrogate protection in the absence of the Malaysian government providing state protection. But in terms of what protection the card provides, it's really quite an informal understanding between the government, law enforcement, as well as the UNHCR, where if a refugee has gone through the process and has been recognized as a refugee under international law, if they produce the documents to any law enforcement, the police, the understanding is that they will not be arrested on grounds of violation of any immigration offenses. So it does provide this informal protection for them to be able to move freely. But because it's not a legislation, it's not issued by the government, it still means that legally they can be, if they don't have any other visa, it means that they're still violating the Immigration Act and they still can be arrested and detained. So it's a bit of an... it's an interesting protection structure, but it's the best one we have for now, although it's definitely not, it's not good enough.
It may be the best one we have for now, but you know, the recent AG report found that migrant workers with valid I cards were still arrested by police. Now, the reason is quite ridiculous. There was inadequate awareness among enforcement agencies about this new registration and issuance of this legal document for migrant workers. What's the problem here?
Yeah, no, it's a really good question. I think it's something that we've seen really often, even from migrant workers, as you said. You know, we've heard reports even from refugees who have visas or UNHCR cards. Here, law enforcement just takes it and, you know, throws it away, or you know, they still don't. I guess because of the general insecurity that foreigners, especially migrant workers and refugees, have in Malaysia, I think it's a lack of access, lack of awareness on both the law enforcement's part, as well as refugees, in this case that you were talking about, migrant workers, that they don't know how to, they're not able to assert their rights, and also because of the power dynamics and the power difference, they're not comfortable doing so. And I think the point that you raised is a really important one, which is training and educating law enforcement on all this, what the legal status that are accorded to migrant workers, and down the road, hopefully, refugees, and what kind of protection that affords them. So it's really, it's an ongoing problem. And I think the way the solution has to be consistent training and awareness raising on the part of law enforcement and the first frontline officers who are dealing with migrant workers and refugees. And beyond just the legal status is also the sensitization. I mean, they need to be aware that refugees, migrants, as individuals that they're communicating with have rights, as not just as a refugee or as a migrant, as a human being, to be treated well. And that is just really, it's a long-term process. But just focusing on the documentation, that has to be immediate training. And I understand UNHCR also, as part of the efforts, is doing very regular outreach and training for law enforcement and frontline officers in terms of the value of the UN, or what the UNHCR card is, as well as who a refugee is.
You're right. It is a long-term process. Now, Deepa, last month, Mercy Malaysia founder Dr. Jamila Mahmood suggested that nations grant refugees temporary citizenship because that gives them at least some sort of protection. Question is, will it?
I found it to be an interesting suggestion. I think ultimately the notion of citizenship is quite a sensitive one for most countries. And so I don't feel it's necessary to go down that path of citizenship just yet. Ultimately, what's really important for refugees the moment they arrive in any country is to be able to have some sort of legal status that would allow them to move freely, that would allow them to be able to access any asylum procedures that are available, be able to access temporary work. And so I feel like citizenship is, and ultimately it's really important for any country that has asylum laws in place to be able to have a pathway towards naturalization in the country, or long-term durable solution in the country. But in the immediate term, what's more important is having the access to legal status, but also ability to integrate into the country and to be able to access social services and work permits and schooling and healthcare and banking facilities. Those are the priority areas. And I think, citizenship is probably not something that we really need to focus on immediately.
We're going to hear more from Deepa after the news, where I'll ask her what Malaysia's issue is for not wanting to ratify the Refugee Convention yet. Stay tuned to the Evening Edition, BFM 89.9.
Be firmly motivated. BFM 89.9.
Good evening. I'm Kelvin Yee for the Evening Edition, and on the line with me now is Deepa Nambia, Country Director at Asylum Access, a refugee human rights organisation with the belief that all refugees deserve a fair chance at a new life. Deepa, we've been talking about the flaws in our system and how we can better improve the process of helping refugees. And in light of the atrocities taking place in Myanmar now that's costing millions of lives of the Rohingya people, Malaysia has been actively helping out. We've said we would build a field hospital at the Rohingya refugee camp in Bangladesh. And we've been sending humanitarian aid too. We're doing all these things, but we still haven't ratified the Refugee Convention yet. What's holding us back?
We've heard quite a few different reasons from different sources. I think there's a couple of ones that stand out. The first one is this idea that if we ratify the convention, it would be a pull factor. And we hear this not just from the Malaysian government. There's a lot of governments that the reason for not implementing a particular kind of positive policy for refugees is that we fear more will start streaming in. And I think that's an important one to recognize as a valid concern. It needs to be acknowledged, but the evidence doesn't really show that necessarily. When we look at, for example, Philippines and Cambodia, they're both Southeast Asian nations that have ratified the 1951 Refugee Convention, but they've got incredibly low numbers of refugees that go there. They even have legal status, they've got work, but there's so many other factors that come into play when a refugee decides which country. And almost always they never really decide. It's almost just out of necessity. But there's so many other factors that come into play in that moment. For example, in Malaysia, the majority of refugees are Myanmar. Many of them are Rohingya. And so this is the nature of refugee movements as well. The geography plays a huge part of it. The majority of refugees are just fleeing to the closest country. Family and community links, employment opportunities. So I think really it's not so much about the convention, and that's something that we have, in our advocacy as well, of course, it would be ideal that the government ratify the convention, but it's really not necessary. Look at Australia, for example, they've been heavily criticized for their treatment of refugees, and they have ratified the convention. So really, as long as there are basic laws that govern their status and stay so they can be self-reliant, and they're able to go to school and work, and ultimately they don't want to be a burden to the host country. And so just kind of going back to the question, this pull factor argument is one that we heard a lot, but ratifying the convention or providing protection in the country through laws is not necessarily going to, at least there's no immediate evidence at this point to show that it's going to lead to an influx. Another reason why we've heard is that the government does not want to ratify the convention is not having the resources to be able to support refugees, in the sense that we can't, take care of the rights of our own citizens, or the priority is to take care of the rights of our own citizens. What more refugees who are coming into the country? But for that, the reality is that right now in Malaysia, NGOs, UNHCR, and refugees are really supporting the ecosystem. And what is needed in the part of the government is to develop the supporting legal and policy environment. And ultimately, there might be, you see some countries that have ratified the convention, there is an initial cost that comes in, or causes an initial investment in terms of social security and those sorts of things. And ultimately, it's up to the country. But there's more and more research coming out to show that in the long term, having refugees integrate well into societies will yield positive economic outcomes to host countries. So I think there are certain concerns in terms of why the country is not ratifying the convention, and they have to be acknowledged, but they also have to be seen in the broader context of what the long-term benefits can be.
And that point you made about how there isn't enough resources and how we can't even take care of the rights of our own citizens is a valid one. I mean, the rights of the Orang Asli come to mind, stateless children as well. Do you think Malaysians have hearts big enough to understand the plight of refugees and help them with their lives? It's one thing for organisations in the country to fight for the rights of refugees, but it's a huge thing if we had Malaysians understand the situation, isn't it?
Yeah, I think Malaysians do have the heart to understand the situation of refugees and assist them. I feel like a lot of it has to do with just knowing them. It's very easy to talk about a population as this distinct population separate from us. But when we speak to them, we get to know them. And of course, in our organization, we do that. But there's also so many other ways. They are just really living in urban areas. You know, they are selling flowers. They are just working in restaurants. Knowing them on a personal level, we will very quickly see that they just want the same things that the rest of us want, just some stability and security in our lives. And I think Malaysians can see that. You know, in terms of what the government getting their act together, I mean, there's so many issues that, you're right, I mean, statelessness is another huge issue in Malaysia, and there are also lots of stateless Rohingyas who are in Malaysia that, you know, in the law, there seems to be an opportunity for them to have some sort of path to citizenship. But there's a lot of bureaucracy and a lot of discretion that is involved in that. So I think ultimately our responsibility as Malaysians, I think it just displays our maturity to be able to say we want to look beyond ourselves. We want to look at, you know, there's no us versus them. We're all people living in this country, we are people as people, wanting the same things and wanting to have a better life. And if there's anything that we can do as individuals to help refugees, whether it's supporting them integrate better into the country by donating to, you know, UNHCR or organizations that are working with refugees, whatever you can do as an individual, I think everyone should just really try to play their role and try to see refugees in ourselves.
What's the ideal framework a country should adopt when they accept refugees? If you had the powers that be listening to you right now, what would you suggest they do?
So first, I would say there is no... it's a bit hard to speak of an ideal framework because the contexts are so different in different countries. And of course, the Refugee Convention does set out some basic rights and procedures that need to be in place. First of all, there needs to be access to asylum procedures. So when an individual arrives in a country, as I mentioned earlier, be given some sort of temporary legal status pending the determination of their claim for refugee status. So that's the first thing. So they need to be that immediate status plus an asylum process that can recognize them or otherwise, in some cases, if they're not refugees. So that first process is really crucial. But also, you know, knowing that it's going to take time to develop for refugees, assuming there is this process in place, it's going to take time for refugees to go through that process. There needs to be temporary measures in place that allow them to access work permits, to send their children to school, to be able to go to a hospital and access affordable healthcare in the meantime. And then in the longer term as well, there needs to be some sort of legal status that can be renewed on a regular basis. That's not uncommon, but that allows them to be in Malaysia, integrate and live their lives until there is a permanent solution. And in some cases, they may never be. There may never be an opportunity to return back to their country because their country is just in a state of war. And they can never be, there might not be an opportunity for them to be resettled. So bearing those two in mind, if they can just live in this case, Malaysia, contribute to the economy, send their children to school and just live a decent and dignified life, that would really be the ideal situation. And, you know, it sounds quite complicated, and certainly, you know, we don't want to discount that it there's a lot of components to it, but Malaysia can already start taking some initial steps toward doing that, for example, and we have actually. So there's been situations where in the past there's been Bosnian refugees, recently Syrian refugees that have come to Malaysia, and the government has issued passes to these populations that actually give them all these rights, that allow them to stay in Malaysia and to work and to send their kids to school and to get discounts and be able to access same rates as Malaysians in hospitals. And this is all within existing laws. We've not even ratified the convention. So I don't think it has to be as complicated as it sometimes sounds. We have the laws in place to be able to do that. Now we just need the political will.
And speaking of political will, before I let you go deeper, your thoughts of Aung San Suu Kyi and what's happening in Myanmar now?
Yeah, it's so... I think I really struggle. I mean, I think objectively we can see what's happening. That's completely deplorable, unacceptable that as a leader of a country, you're not stepping in to protect people, your citizens rightfully, but individuals in your own country. This is basic human rights. And so I think her lack of leadership and her inability to speak out for such a persecuted population is really unacceptable. You know, at the same time, I think we as an international community might not be seeing enough is the toxicity with which conversations are happening internally. And this is something that we've heard from our clients and individuals that we work with. It's almost impossible for us to understand the narrative that is happening in Myanmar that is causing all of this to happen, the complex political and social and cultural and economic and all of that interplays. And ultimately, the solution is just a really long and complex one, and it has to come internally, I think. Countries, I think, of course, play a really important role in terms of putting pressure on Myanmar to protect their citizens better. But the process of rebuilding and restructuring those conversations and mindsets is just a really long process. And I really hope it starts sometime soon.
Deepa, thanks so much for speaking with me this evening about the rights of refugees and for giving us a better view about what's really happening on the ground. If you know someone who'd be interested in the plight of refugees and their rights, you can get them to download the podcast of this show via our BFM app or directly from our website. The Football Boys are coming up after the 8 p.m. news, so stay tuned for that on the evening edition, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.